That's what my staff is telling me.
I'm going to call the May 4th Committee of the Whole to order. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Alderman DeAndrea.
Excused.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Excused.
Alderwoman Evans.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Here.
Alderwoman Mayer.
Here.
We have a quorum. Please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is serious stuff, and it's good stuff. Mr. Ratzenberg, item 2, Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, and the communications letter from Clifton Larson Allen. Mr. Ratzenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to introduce Jacob Leno and Shannon Small from Clifton Larson Allen. They are the audit team that reviews the work that staff does to prepare this statement. They're here this evening to present their report to you after the presentation of the statements themselves. I'd like to start out by expressing a gratitude to my own staff and the Treasury Department, as well as all the department heads, for assistance in preparing these statements. And without their help, these statements couldn't be prepared as thoroughly and as completely as they are. We're going to take an opportunity to go through the statements this evening. I'll do it in a briefer fashion than I did last week before the Finance Committee, who also reviewed these statements and recommend their acceptance by the Common Council. But please feel free to stop me with any questions that you might have at any point in time in the presentation. I direct your attention to page 40 in your packet. It's page 32 on the report itself, which is the summary of the general fund on Exhibit F. That presents the statements in comparison to budget. I'd start out by pointing out that the general fund produced a surplus of $851,000. That compares to a balanced budget that was adopted the previous year. The reason you see a $990,000 deficit there was a contingency reserve that we put in place that was not intended to be used. So, page 40 in the packet, Schedule F, it's page 32 in the middle of the page there. So I'll refer to the packet page numbers, which are on the bottom right-hand corners, to help people get to where they need to be. But it's page 40 on that packet, and that's a summary of the... Shannon, if you just move that off to your right, we probably will be in better shape. Thank you. The primary reason why the general fund produced the surplus that it did was because expenditures were less than anticipated. Revenues came in very, very close to what we expected. The largest single favorable variance on the revenue side was the investment income as we adjusted the carrying value of investments to their current market value. And with declining interest rates, those revenues rose. On the expense side of the ledger, within the general government, there was an open position in human resources and then unused contingency reserves were the principal reason for the favorable variance there. In public safety, the variance was related to retiree health costs being less than anticipated. As the budget was being pulled together, we were using preliminary actuarial reports, and late in the year, a modification to the actuarial report reduced the required contribution, and that's what ended up flowing through the statements. The other significant variance is in the culture and development, conservation and development, and that was again due to an open position for the economic development director. If there are no other questions on the general fund, I'm going to skip forward to point out that there's a exhibits 3 and 4.
Paul, which, can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Regarding the revenues, the negative amounts that are on there, what are your expectations, I guess, for next year? Because really the only thing that really covered that was investment income.
I would say that we would anticipate generating a similar performance, although I would expect it to be slightly favorable rather than unfavorable. We were careful in planning for revenues for next year. And at this point in time, being as early in the year as we are, it's difficult to say, but to be as close as we are is in a good position, but it's a crystal ball, and my crystal ball is only as clear as other people's crystal balls.
It'd be very easy to go negative, though, is what I'm saying, if the investment income wasn't as good as it wound up being, and the other revenue.
That is a possibility, and certainly we'll be producing monthly reports so we can monitor what's going on. As we're looking at 2015, through the first quarter, building permits are the biggest shortfall to plan because the building activity right now in the city is less than we anticipated and less than the prior 2 years. So that's generating less revenue.
And then what is the public charges for services? Why would
in
that
the
be so
general
negative?
Fund, public charges for services would be ambulance fees would be the largest one there, and I would expect that'll be coming very close to plan.
Okay, thank you.
The revenues and the expenses are detailed compared to budget on Schedule 3, which begins on page 89 in your packet. So this breaks out in further detail the question that Alderwoman Mayer just inquired about. The individual details are listed there. The revenues being on Schedule 3 and the expenditures being on Schedule 4. If we look at the expenditure side in the general fund, the $60,000 variance, favorable variance there in the administration side was the result of an open position in the human resource area. The contingency reserves were not used to their full extent, so that was the $229,000 favorable variance there. Within public safety, as I mentioned earlier, retiree costs were the principal reason why variances were favorable. If I flip forward to page 92, you'll see a $22,000 variance in the health and human services section. We had a position which we were sharing with the city of Greenfield in 2013. In Q1 of 2014, that position became an employee of our city. And then we started sharing some of those costs with Greenfield. So we had budgeted the position to be in the department the entire year. So that's why you see that shift between personnel and non-personnel services there. In the public works area, you might recall that early in 2014, snow plowing activities were pretty heavy. We did a $20,000 personnel budget amendment to add to overtime. It turned out we really didn't need all of that because even without that, our actual costs were less than the original budget. But in the other non-personnel services within the highway department, we did a $103,000 amendment for salt purchases, and we needed most of that. So that's the significant reason in those particular areas. And again, in conservation and development, the open economic development director position is the primary reason for the variance there. If there aren't any other questions on the general fund, then I'm going to direct your attention back to Exhibit D. This is a primary schedule in this report that you might want to pay attention to read at your convenience when you get a chance. The first column is the general fund, and it gives an explanation of what's happening there. That's that $851,000 that we talked about in some detail. That would be on page 38 of your packet. So the first column is the general fund of the city. We've just discussed that. The next column is the debt service fund. And in this particular fund, we showed a surplus of about $1,068,000. $1,062,000 of that surplus was used to repay an internal advance. And the taking of an advance and the repayment of an advance does not impact the operating statements. So the surplus there was used, it just doesn't show in this particular statement. The next column are the combined TIF districts of the city. And here you see that there was a $3.9 million deficit, which appears at the bottom, nearly at the bottom of that column. There's a number of things going on within the TIF districts. We'll talk about that in some detail a little bit later, but just to trying to walk you through this Exhibit D will be helpful. Then in the next column are all of the non-major governmental funds of the city. And there will be a schedule that details what those are in a little bit. Then when you combine the whole thing, then you see total governmental activities off to the right. So we'll talk a little bit further in detail on the TIF districts. That is explained in Schedule 11 on page 92 of your report. So there's a TID 3 and a TID 4 that are active in the city. And the items that I would point out in this is tax revenue through the increment are the primary sources of revenue in these particular funds. TID 3 had a $9.7 million principal payment, which you see in the middle of the page. TID 3 has also begun the 27th Street project costs. So you see $330,000. Page 101 of your packet.
Up by 10.
And it's Schedule 11 in its upper right corner. Then at the bottom of the schedule, you'll recall that in December, we sold some debt. The TID 3 took $3.3 million of that debt offering in December, and you see those proceeds coming in 2014. In 2015, we would expect substantially all of those proceeds to be used for the 27th Street project. Now, it depends on when the state completes that as to exactly when those funds will be dispersed. We have the utility burying project, which is going on right now, and that has used about $1.5 million of those debt proceeds already. TID 4 had the proceeds come in. It showed a surplus of $845,000. That was used to pay some internal advances. So the city, up until 2014, had been advancing the funds that the TIDs needed through internal advances. And in 2014, TID 4 repaid a little better than $800,000 of those advances. TID 3 actually took a $2.2 million advance early in 2014 to complete the $9.7 million payment that I mentioned that shows up above. And then that will get repaid in the next several years. And then TID 3 needed an additional $3.3 million to fund the 27th Street project. So then let's take a look at the non-major funds. The non-major funds are presented to you on what's called Schedule 2. The page numbers are starting on page 87 and 88. On page 87, you see the special revenue funds of the city. The first one on that page 87 is the library fund. It showed a small surplus for the year, and the principal reason was that the intergovernmental revenue of $101,000 was double what was budgeted for the year, and that generated substantially all of the surplus in the library fund. Solid Waste Fund generated a small surplus of $28,000. Its fund balance now is $218,000. We are slowly, over time, building that fund balance to get to our city policy of trying to have between 20 and 30% of the following year's expenditures as a fund balance. And over several years, we will get there. This particular Solid Waste Fund was begun in 2012, I believe, was the first year of that fund. There are several other minor funds in this particular one. The most interesting point I think you can pick off of this particular page is that the St. Martin's Fair Fund has now generated a deficit of $11,550. The principal reason for that is the revenues do not meet the needs for the public safety costs that the city have been incurring for that particular fund. Then if you flip forward to page 88, Now you see the capital projects funds of the city. There are four capital project funds that begin that, the capital outlay fund, which is where we buy our equipment. The equipment replacement fund are the larger dollar value pieces of equipment generally that are on wheels. Fire engines, snowplow trucks are the primary items that flow through that particular fund. Capital improvement fund are where the major projects of the city flow through. We had $5.7 million worth of projects planned for 2014, but we only completed $1.5 million, I believe, is the total on that particular one. And in that fund, we took a new borrowing of not quite $2 million, and that will finance some of the projects that occurred that year as well as they get completed in 2015. Fund listed is the Street Improvement Fund. That deals with the street improvement activity that occurs on an annual basis, and its primary revenues are a portion of the tax levy as well as landfill siting revenues. Then you have two funds that are used to help finance some of these activities. Utility Improvement Fund's primary revenues are coming from either utility special assessments or connection fees into the sewer and water fund activities that are going on. So the revenues come in there, and then as the projects come along in the city, we transfer funds from the Utility Improvement Fund over to the Capital Improvement Fund to pay for those particular costs. The Development Fund is the fund that captures all of the impact fees that the city assesses for new development. There's also some investment income, as this fund is carrying a rather substantial balance that you see at the bottom of the column. The expenditures from this fund are nearly always transfers out to other funds. And in 2014, the transfers out were a little better than $1.7 million. They went in three directions. On an annual basis, upwards of $300,000 comes out of this fund to the debt service fund to deal with costs associated with the police station, the most recent fire station, the library building project, and the Drexel Avenue Road project that took place several years ago. Revenues have been insufficient to cover all of that debt service the last several years, but we continue to maintain and monitor that. As the revenues arrive for those debt services, we will transfer it over to the debt service fund. Second transfer out of this fund is from the development fund to the capital improvement projects. The primary expenditure there are park impact fees. As park projects take place, the funds are transferred from the development fund to the capital improvement fund. We did not complete all of the park impact fee or park projects that were planned for 2014, so not all of the transfers took place. And the last major one that took place, transfer that came out of the development fund, was an $870,000 transfer of water impact fees to the water utility. That was, the funds were finally collected against the Pute's water tower project, which was completed in 2002, but it took until now to capture all of those funds from the collection of impact fees, and then they were transferred to the water utility. So those are the non-major funds and all of the totals here, which come forward to Schedule D that we previously talked about. I'd like to spend a couple of minutes on the enterprise funds. These are on Schedule H. This is the revenue and expenditures. That would be on page 43 of your packet. Schedule H is developed in a slightly different fashion. Here we show comparative numbers because they are treated as like you would at a for-profit business. So the first two columns are 2014 and 2013 for the water utility. The water utility in 2014 generated a surplus from operations of about $365,000. And then at the bottom of the page there, that column, you see two numbers that might draw your interest. One is the $873,000 transfer in that we talked about from the development fund. Those are the park impact fees. And then immediately below that, you see a transfer out of the water utility of $1,044,000. On an annual basis, the PSC and the state statutes do provide that the water utilities can remit to the municipality or the city an equivalent of a pilot payment equal to the property taxes that would be assessed on the infrastructure in the water utility. For the city of Franklin, that amounts to $1 million, and that goes into the general fund as general fund revenues. And you'll see that in the prior year it was $1,127,000. So it's a substantial payment that comes from the water utility to this general fund on an annual basis, and that is funded through water utility rates. Next to that, those two columns, you see the sanitary sewer fund. In the current year, it had a deficit of $328,000 from operations. Depreciation charges gave it some additional cash flow that are needed. Nothing else of real significance is going on in that particular page. Last column that you see on the far right is the self-insurance fund that the city runs for our active employees. The self-insurance fund generated...
At some point, we need to have a discussion about the sewer utility because they run as a deficit just about every year for as long as I can remember.
They do, but it's not an issue for the city that it generates a deficit because it generates sufficient cash to meet its requirements. And by that I mean there's a non-cash charge for depreciation on previous expenditures, which give it a positive cash flow. You can see that on a Schedule I, which is the very next page. And since the question came up, the third column over is the current year cash flow for the sanitary sewer fund. And there you see that it actually had a surplus of cash generated from the operations for the year of $293,000. Now, the previous year it was a deficit, but that was really a timing issue. The sewer utility fund, from a cash flow generation standpoint, is operating sufficiently. There's no real concerns that I would have from a finance standpoint in the sanitary sewer fund, as long as we maintain current rates. So as we get those increases from MMSD, on an annual basis, we approach the Common Council to increase the sanitary sewer rates. And as long as we stay current with those rate increases, sanitary sewer fund will be fine. Alderman Mayor.
There was a 1.5% increase from MMSD this last time.
That's correct.
And we took a 1%?
We took a 1% reduction in our own rates because we were generating sufficient cash to keep the rate increase to a very small portion for this year.
How much did that affect?
Our rate reduction?
Yeah.
The 1% rate reduction was in the neighborhood of about $50,000. So it wasn't significant, and there's sufficient cash in the utility to permit that to happen. The last column on this particular on the Schedule H, back on page 43, is the self-insurance fund. These are for active employees. That fund generated a surplus from operations of $217,000, and then had investment income of $116,000. Now, I want to direct your attention two pages forward, so if you would go back to page 41, these are the balance sheets for these funds, and a couple of things that I would point out to you. 41. This is page 41 in your packet, in the lower right-hand corner. The first thing I would point out to you is that the water utility now has a cash balance of $2.4 million, and you'll see in the prior year it had a $54,000 cash balance. The reason all that cash suddenly appears in the water utility is twofold. The $870,000 transfer in of the impact fees by state statute, when we impose the water impact fee for the Putes Road water tower, we are required when we collect it to transfer it over. Now that the fund had the funds available, we transferred them in. In addition, the water utility took a $1.2 million loan in December, and that loan is going to be used to finance the water utility building that's currently under construction. And then the water utility has a capital project for about $350,000 for the Scepter Circle water main replacement, and that'll tap this additional use of this $2.4 million cash reserve. So that's why that exists. The other thing I would point out in the far right column, the governmental, the self-insurance fund, at the end of 2014 had $2.3 million in advances to other funds. So that's how the surplus that exists, accumulated surplus over time in the self-insurance fund has been invested. Rather than go to the outside debt markets, we use these funds between funds and then put the interest into the self-insurance fund. Then if you page forward to the next page, you see the obligations of the utilities and the self-insurance fund. The items that I would point out there is in the water utility, you see for the first time $1.2 million. That's the loan that was taken in December. And in the sanitary sewer fund, you see $22.3 million as general obligation notes payable in the third column about the middle of the page. That is the clean water fund that the sewer utility took out in 2012 to finance the Ryan Creek Interceptor. And just by way of refreshment for the Common Council, the sewer fund took out this $22 million loan, constructed the Ryan Creek Interceptor. By intergovernmental agreement, Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District has agreed to make all of the principal and interest payments on that loan beginning in 2015. Any payments that were required prior to 2015 were advanced from the general fund to the sewer fund, and MMSD will repay those funds in 2017 as its cash flows provided. So the general funds, the only cost that the utility is experiencing on the Ryan Creek Interceptor is the foregone investment income on the $2.1 million advance that the general fund made to the sewer fund while it was making those payments when MMSD returns it. That help explain how that arrangement is working? So you see the debt sitting on the books, and then right several lines below that, you see the obligation from the sanitary sewer fund of $2.2 million that's due back to the general fund and will be repaid in January of 2017 when MMSD repays those funds to the sewer utility. So it makes the utility relatively cash neutral relative to the Ryan Creek Interceptor project.
Well, we might as well start the discussion. Well,
sure.
Because when that loan payment comes in, it's going to be $2.2 million to the positive impact on the tax, on the fund balances, which will, at that time, kick us way over policy in terms of fund balances.
The Common Council can see what the mayor is describing on Exhibit C as in Charlie.
Am I jumping ahead?
No, you're not. That's fine, because that was about where I was going at this point in time. So if you, this would be on page 36 of your packet, 28 on yours. Page 36 on your packet, you see the general fund balance in the lower left corner. Now, the mayor alluded to the $2.2 million that's going to be repaid by MMSD that we've been talking about. You see that as a non-spendable fund balance. Because some funds have been advanced to the sewer fund, they are not available to the general fund to expend for other purposes. And that's why they appear here as a non-spendable fund balance. In 2017, when those funds get repaid, that non-spendable fund balance will go to zero and it will fall down to the unassigned balance at the bottom of that column. Alderman DeMere.
So
Alderman DeMere.
Austin, on page 36.
Right.
Middle of the page.
Middle of the page.
And the far left column. It's the general fund column. And then you go to the bottom of that column, you see fund balances and deficit. The top two categories are non-spendable fund balance. And there's a $2,198,616 balance there.
That's the total of the six something and the eight something?
No, and you should see that number itself on the page. Page 36 at the lower right column.
Yeah.
And then...
No, that's okay. You can keep going. I'll keep
that comes from the loan to MMSD. It's not a combined number. It is its own number. And it's a loan from MMSD from the Interceptor Sewer.
Okay.
So when that loan gets repaid and the general fund receives those funds balances back, the general fund unassigned balance will jump up by $2.2 million. And then by our fund balance policy, we will be significantly over the fund balance policy, and we'll have the issue of how to deal with that excess fund balance. It's a good problem to have.
$2,198,000.
Yes.
Okay.
Dancy's red trucks.
No, I just was looking for
2.1.
Yeah.
$2,198,000.
Generally, I'm good at rounding numbers. Sorry, continue.
Okay, then while we're talking about it, immediately below that you see purchases on order, $207,270 in that same column. Those are commitments that the general fund made principally from the November 4th Common Council meeting for the economic development activities that we're currently researching. And this was the unspent portion in 2014 that'll get spent in 2015. And so we reserved that much of the fund balance because we've committed to spend those monies. Then I would direct your attention very briefly to pages 46 and 47. These are two funds that we don't talk about very often. They are agency funds, if you will, of the city. By state statute, the city collects, so I'm on pages 46 and 47. We'll start on page 46. The agency funds that you see there, the city by state statute collects all of the tax monies that are due the several taxing districts that tax the city of Franklin properties. At December of 2014, $53 million had been collected against those tax bills that went out in early December, and $16.3 million of other agency receivables were yet to be collected. In middle of January, that $53 million was then dispersed to the taxing authorities, and there are scheduled payments by state statute as to when those go out. The following column next to that is the OPEB trust, that is the other post-employment benefit trust. This pays for retiree health benefits. In 2008, the city established a trust to actually hold assets that can pay for the future benefits that are accumulating. And the benefits which had been granted but not yet funded in 2008 began to be funded over a 30-year time frame. And so you begin to see those assets collect and accumulate here. Once we exhaust that time frame in the mid-2030s, we should have sufficient funds in this trust to cover our costs for employees who have then retired, as well as the service costs that occurred up until that point in time. And then our annual cost for retiree benefits will only be the cost for the active employees for the current year's service. It's a relatively small amount of money. Currently, it's less than $200,000 a year, while we are making payments into this fund currently of $550,000. So the extra money is the prior service costs and the accumulated interest on it that's required to get this fund up to where it needs to be. The city of Franklin is very conservative in adopting that policy and making it happen. We are somewhat unique in the state. There are not a lot of cities that have these trusts, but I can tell you that in the financial community, there's a lot of focus on this particular liability, and the liability associated with this will be, in the not-too-distant future, required to be placed on the face of the financial statements. And Jake's shaking his head yes, he may want to make some comments on that when we get to his portion of the presentation.
Before you go on from that, first of all, I'll take part of the credit, and Alderman Solomon takes the other part. We were the ones that jumped up and down and said, oh, wait a minute, time out, what's our liability here? And what was our liability, $6.9 million, is what I remember?
The liability that exists relative to that is found for you, I believe it's page, I know the report number, but I don't know the number here.
This big number.
It's a big number. It appears on your page 83 in your packet, in the lower right-hand corner, page 83. We present the liabilities on this page for two types of liabilities. We're talking right now about the post-employment benefit trust. That's the second group of numbers that are presented there. And on January 1st of 2014, the plan had assets of about $3.9 million. We had a liability of $7,095,000. For an unfunded liability of $3,187,000. So that's the amount of money that the city needs to accumulate yet and place into this trust in the future. And we will take approximately 22 years to do that. So it's an orderly fashion, and it'll be done, but then we will be done with that cost, and we will save a tremendous amount of money over time by making that, by adopting this policy. Now, since we're on this page, the other item that's presented here, the city maintains three post-employment retirement plans. The largest of the three is related to the Wisconsin retirement system. Our public safety employees are covered there. That fund is substantially funded. So there's a small liability from year to year. There may be a small surplus in that particular fund, but no real unfunded liability is presented in our report related to that because it is substantially funded. The second largest plan that we have is a defined contribution plan, where the city puts money into a fund for employees and has no further obligation to those employees after putting the funds into the plan. And then the third plan that we have is a plan for the former for the public works employees as well as our utility employees, and that is the plan that's presented on the top here. It is a defined benefit plan, so we are committing to make payments to the employees of a certain amount, a defined amount, for the balance of their lives once they retire. The plan had $6,175,000 in assets at the beginning of 2014. It had a plan liability to pay all those employees of $7,061,000 or an unfunded liability of $886,000 at the beginning of 2014. Over time, again, we are funding that, and that liability should shrink as those payments go in, but then it also depends on the performance of the assets over time. The accounting for pensions has recently changed, and actually in 2015, when we present next year's report, the unfunded liability will come onto our books for this particular plan. That's a change in accounting policy that will take place this year in 2015. So the next report that you see. I think that pretty well takes care of the presentation that I believe needs to be made at this point in time. And so I'm going to turn it over to Jake Lennell, the partner from Clifton Larson Allen. He has a report and some required disclosures to present to you about his review of our statements. So Jake?
Thank you.
Jake, give us your name and address, please, for the record.
Jake Lennell, Clifton Larson Allen, 10700 West Research Drive, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thank you for having us in to talk with you as well on the audit results as it relates to the financial statements that Paul just went through in detail. I do have a couple of things here to go through as it relates to the audit steps that we perform as we issue a report on those financial statements. But also just wanted to briefly introduce myself. I do see a couple of familiar faces from my tenure here. I was with the city up through 2012 as a senior manager then, and as part of my transition into partner, Renee Messing had remained on the engagement, but with Renee's retirement at the end of last year, I'm back. So it's good to see everyone again, a couple of new faces, but also a couple of familiar ones. So, and I have with me Shannon Small, the engagement manager. Shannon Small has been with the city for 5 So she was critical in keeping me in the loop as I transitioned back into the role. I'm very thankful to have her present for the field work on site, reviewing the detailed work that our staff perform as well. So just want to go through quickly a brief synopsis of the information here. Paul really just walked us through that full CAPR document. So I just wanted to mention just a couple of pieces as it relates to the financial information included in that document. And the first is related to the auditor's report. That's really the only piece of that document that's ours is your auditor's. The rest of the document is prepared by your management and is management's responsibility. Our report is a unmodified opinion, or what's commonly referred to as a clean opinion. So it's the highest level of assurance that we can provide you as your auditors that the financial statements are free of material misstatement. So a strong symbol of the quality of the document. In addition to that indicator of quality, you also receive an award from the GFOA, which is included in the financial statements as part of the introductory section of your financial statement. So again, that document is reviewed by three different reviewers GFOA's Special Reviewer Committee. I'm a volunteer for that program, so I know the length and depth of which reviewers go to be able to issue a vote page that is a yes. And so, again, a very strong symbol of the quality of that document. The other piece of information that I direct your attention to is the management discussion and analysis. And Paul just went through a number of highlights with the financial information, in particular the year-over-year analysis and budgetary analysis that's included within your financial statements. And if you only had a limited amount of time to review this full CAFR document, that's probably where I'd direct your attention, because although it's at a much higher level than what Paul just described, it gives you a little bit of that same kind of flavor at a high level of year-over-year information and budgetary information, giving you some of the current year activities that would have influenced that information. So just wanted to highlight those two pieces of info. And then I also wanted to walk through just an idea of where we spend our time when we perform our audit of that financial information presented by your management. And really, I have identified up there a number of our most significant audit areas, cash and investments being obviously the most liquid asset that you have on hand, most susceptible to fraud and theft. We spend quite a bit of time moving through the reconciliation procedures that you have in place, ensuring that bank balances are confirmed by the outside institutions, that any of the reconciling type items that you have identified throughout the year are clearing those reconciliations properly and timely, that you're not carrying forward those variances month after month. So we focus a lot of time on the controls that you have in place related to that process and also confirming those balances as of the end of the year. Within receivables and related revenues, you really have three different types of receivables that are making your make up the substantial amount of your receivables. And the first is taxes receivable. Obviously, as of the end of the year, you've got significant balances for the levy that you've just adopted and have not yet collected. So we spend time within the review of that information to see that it's in accordance with the levy that you adopted, as well as that the timing of the collections of those amounts prior to the end of the year has been properly reported within the financials. The second would be utility receivables, and that's more of that commercial type environment where you've got an invoice generated off of the usage of your water and sewer billings. So we do perform procedures around the controls related to the not only the invoicing process, but then the cash receipt process to see that those amounts are being properly applied to customer accounts and the amounts are appropriate. And then the third receivable, significant receivable, as Paul mentioned, the MMSD receivable related to your long-term debt within the sewer utility. Long-term obligations and including the debt and OPEB, I did just want to mention that a unique area related to your long-term obligations is that all of your debt is general obligation debt. So that actually makes our job a little bit easier as your auditors, because your revenue bonds would typically come with a lot more strings attached. There would be covenants that you would need to adhere to in addition to just your overall levy limit or your debt limit. So because these bonds are general obligation bonds, you don't have the same kind of revenue coverage requirements and those types of testing requirements. So we can simply confirm those balances with the trustees and perform our work on a substantive basis that way. Fund balance and net position, really just our focus on those areas is to see those are your accumulated reserves within each of your funds. And our focus there is to see that all of those accumulated reserves, when they have a restriction or a designation or a commitment, or they're not spendable for purposes of long-term receivables, those amounts are appropriately reflected within the financial statements so that the users can really see what do you have available to you within your reserves. So that's really the focus. It's more on the reporting side rather than testing the transactions running through there. And then general disbursements and payroll disbursements, both being significant activities for cash going out the door, where we spend time on the controls related to those processes, ensuring that invoices are approved timely. If it's related to payroll, that there's appropriate time card authorizations, the appropriate approvals are there, the salaries are applied appropriately, really focusing on the controls in place. Paul walked us through the financial information related to the governmental fund, so I'm not going to spend much time on this slide. The only thing that I point out is you can see the bottom left column, the general fund, the very bottom of the page there is the unassigned fund balance. So really this is your funds available that have accumulated over time within the general fund that are available for cash flow purposes, for one-time purchases, things that that's essentially your working capital there. So $6.1 million, and Paul mentioned the fund balance policy of 20 to 30%. That's about 24 and next is about 27 of the current year's expenditures. So right in that ballpark between that 20 and 30%. So that's really the only thing I wanted to mention there in addition to what Paul had given us as to reasons behind those increases in those funds. And then the next slide will actually take you through the breakdown of those governmental revenues. So really giving you an idea of how are the activities of those governmental funds financed, and very similar to what you'd expect to see for really any type of city, municipality this size. You see you're predominantly funded through your tax levy. That's 72%. That's the big orange pie piece of your revenues. So very consistent with what you'd expect to see. You do see some of your other revenue drivers there, intergovernmental revenues being state and federal aid, licenses and permits. These are the items that we talked through a little bit as we talked through those numbers. And then I also have a similar slide, but on the expenditure side. And the one thing that I thought I'd point out here, you see that public safety is your biggest chunk. That's including fire and police of about 37%. I will say that this pie chart is a little bit skewed this year in that your second largest piece is your debt service. And that's $11 million there on the far upper left. And that's 27%. But really about half of that debt service, or about just over $6 million, was funded through your note receivable that you had that offset and allowed you to pay off that debt this year. So as those debt service amounts will normalize going forward, now that that note is paid off, you'll see that portion of your expenditures shrink by about half. And then one additional piece of... information that Paul walked us through is all done on that modified accrual basis. So it focuses on things that are occurring in the near term. Revenues include, in other financing sources, include proceeds that you issue for debt. And likewise, the payments on those debts are expenditures. GASB requires this additional presentation where we take everything and present it on a full accrual basis. So rather than showing investments in infrastructure such as road improvements and the like as expenditures, this presentation shows it on a full accrual basis. Those expenditures are now assets of the city. So really when you look at your governmental funds of $18 million, when you bring that up to a full accrual presentation, you would see $122.7 million worth of net position or a full accrual position. So it's important to know that really what's driving the difference there are your capital assets and your long-term debt. So those assets are not available to the city to utilize in any way. Right. They're tied up in infrastructure and the long-term liabilities offsetting that. So you see the balance sheet conversion there to go from $18 million to $122 million. Of that $122 million, about $8.8 million is actually what's considered unrestricted, sort of available. So that's very consistent with what you have as a fund balance of about $8.8 million between your unassigned and assigned fund balance. It's very consistent that way. And then on the income statement side, you see that's essentially showing you the change in each of those account balances for the year to help you walk through what was the impact from a modified accrual basis to a full accrual basis. So really just want you to be aware that secondary presentation is required, even though for budget purposes and for any type of financial monitoring type purposes, you're really focused on that fund level and you're focused in the modified accrual. Then the proprietary funds, again, Paul walked us through the top half of that statement, so I'm not going to spend time on your income statement portion, but what I will mention again is you have accumulated through your years of that income statement activity net position of $46.5 million within the water and $46.3 million within the sewer. And again, you can see all of that is tied up in your capital assets. So $45.076 million and $43.4 million are tied in capital assets. What's really actually available to you for working capital purposes is that bottom number of $1.4 million within the water and $2.5 million. And then finally on the fiduciary fund sides, I did want to just briefly mention that the OPEB trust is, as Paul had mentioned, is unique to the city. The other thing that I would say is unique is that the contributions that you have set aside are equal to the actuarial required contribution. So you have sort of drawn that line in the sand and said, we're actually going to fund whatever the actuaries are arriving at for a computation for what this year's contribution should be. So you haven't let that move any further away from you as you have established that trust.
Alderwoman Mayor.
Is that normal? Is that like above what other municipalities do?
Yes, as Paul mentioned, very few actually have a trust established. And then those that have the trust established, they're still generally not able to fully fund that actuarial required contribution yet. They're kind of still in the process of stepping up their contributions to be able to get to that level. So,
and that's a full payment, I guess, or full?
Right. Yeah, the way to think of it is, what do we need to set aside today to fund the liabilities when they come due, when these employees actually retire? And you're able to actually set aside that full amount today.
Do the employees add anything to that, or is this fully funded by the city?
This is fully funded by the city.
No, the employees, that once they retire, the city's portion of their premium is frozen, and then they make some contributions. So I can get you the number as to how much employees are contributing to that plan on an annual basis.
Is there some sort of percentage, rough percentage you can give me?
Yes.
That you could give me now or not?
No, I don't have that committed to memory.
Okay.
This is a big deal, though. This is.
This particular activity on the part of the city is a very conservative one in that many cities are bumping into the statutory limit on how much they can raise the tax levy, so they really can't get the revenues they need to put into this trust. The city of Franklin has structured itself such that it can meet its obligations and still fund all of the prior service costs required to get this fund to a fully funded basis. And in the long run, the city will save tremendous amounts of money by having this fund in place.
How long did you say it would take to do this? Did you give us that?
When the fund was adopted in 2008, we used a 30-year time frame, which is a very common method of doing that. To fund that prior service. So from 2008 to today, that's 8 years into that 30-year time frame.
And we did an actuarial study to determine what that net cost was going to be and then figured out how to do that. And other communities just don't do this. And it's huge. And this is our commitment to our employees, and we're funding it. So it's, I mean, I hope our employees recognize that this is a, you know, we believe in you, and this is our, and we're trustworthy, and this is making it trustworthy.
How long was this in the making?
It came to light in 2007 with GASB 34 rules. And then Solomon and I on finance committee started yelling and screaming about it. You weren't here at the time, I don't think. Were you?
No, I was here when we put it together. And I think one thing that shows the dedication that the city put to it and the importance that we recognize, you know, whether or not a majority of other communities were figuring out a way to do it, the city of Franklin said this is the financially prudent way to do it. And despite going into some very tough economic years, because that's when the sort of markets hit the fan, we continued to meet these funding levels and even laid off people to help ensure that we could. So it was a very, very fiscally responsible way to address these long-term commitments and not just sort of sweep them under the rug, as many communities did and just said, yeah, we'll acknowledge it in our financial statements, but we're only going to pay our as-you-go cost, which doesn't have the best long-term viability. So we've taken, Paul calls it conservative, but it was actually the fiscally prudent thing.
So how much goes in a year?
Currently, our contribution is about $550,000 into this, and the normal cost for the current year's activity is about $184,000.
And we seeded it the first year, it went up 1.2. We threw a big chunk of money out at the end of the start.
We report that information to the Finance Committee on a periodic basis, so it's one of the reports that the original CD money is reported on an annual basis.
And then finally, just wanted to mention as...
I'm sorry, just a side note. Mark, you mentioned that we laid off people to to be able to fund that. When did we lay off people? And how we brought them back?
Not specifically, but indirectly, since they were happening at the same time in the same budget. So we had layoffs in building inspection and in planning back when the economy first turned. We let go three positions, I want to say.
Two planners and two buildings.
Yeah.
So are we back up to level with that, with what we've just hired?
No, we're all of... If you go from about 2007 on, we're still a few positions below where we were.
Okay, so
if you want to see that information in your annual budget book for each of the departments, there's a multi-year staffing history. So you can see the staffing history for various departments for, I believe, as much as 10 years. And those layoffs do show up in the building inspection and the planning department.
Okay. Yeah, planning used to have two clerical, an extra department head, an extra planner, and an extra intern. So that department's, you know, only 60% the size of it was. That's where building's been until this year, when activity level is, over the last 2 years, has grown, and you added one position back. But it's still, if you compare it back to the 2007-2008 days, it's still only about 65% of where it was.
So FTEs were down 4?
I'd have to look at the budget book, but that sounds about right.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Well, perspective's important here. Mark is playing his role perfectly. But the reality is the planning staff, there used to be 3. There used to be 2 planners and a secretary. Then we went on a growth spurt in the late 90s, early 2000s, and got up to, as Mark described, plus a director of economic development. We won't argue about that one. And then now we came back down. So right now we're probably at a 2001 staffing level in planning. And I bet you if you looked in your book, I might be close. Jason, please. Sorry.
So then I did just want to mention here briefly, there are a number of disclosures that follow the statements that Paul walked us through. I just have highlighted here a few that are more significant in nature, just so that you're aware that in addition to just the ending balances as well as the current year activity that occurs within these accounts, there's additional disclosures that give you information about the risks related to these types of balances, any assumptions that go into those numbers, and as well as some roll-forward activity so you can see, kind of reconcile where you were at the start of the year to where you ended up at the end of the year. So that kind of walks us through the financial statement portion of it, or the piggyback information that I wanted to provide as it relates to our audit process on those statements. So I do just have a couple of brief comments to mention on the other financial reports that we issue. The governance communication is our required communications to you as your auditors, and it walks you through a number of things that we're required to tell you about, and I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. As you see, the qualitative aspects of accounting practices, the accounting policies, estimates, and disclosures, these are the pieces of information that relate to the numbers within your financial statements that require some estimation or some assumptions. And so, as you might expect, those assumptions revolve around things like your self-insurance, estimating how many claims you have as of the end of the year that you have not yet paid, the other post-employment benefit assumptions that Paul described, and going into that determination of how much should we set aside in a given year. And then, of course, as you have a significant amount of capital assets, how long are those assets going to live, and what is then the resulting depreciation that goes into your financial statement. So all very typical estimates for the organization, all very consistent. Our role in that process is really to review the assumptions that go into those estimates, seeing that they're reasonable, and the inputs that go into that process as they've been provided to the actuaries, and reviewing that information for reasonableness. So no issues noted, very, very sort of plain vanilla estimates as it relates to that. The one adjustment that we do note to you within the letter is we did have actually a reclassification between a receivable account and a cash account. So this relates to your advanced tax collections as of the end of the year. You get a lot of cash in right at the end of the year as people try to get that for tax purposes. What we noted is that about $3.4 million worth of cash came in by 12/31, but those batches were actually processed into your general ledger at the very start of the next year. And so we have actually in our next letter, we have just a best practice recommendation really to say, as management reviews those batch deposits, they're ensuring that the amounts are reconciled to the registers as well as the bank deposits, but it should also ensure that the proper period is being posted as it gets into the general ledger. Other matters included within that letter, we had no difficulties or disagreements encountered during the audit, no consultations with other accountants. And really the bulk of the letter is management's representations. And what that really is management accepting responsibility for the financial statements, ensuring that they've provided us with all of the information that we would need to ensure that the financials are clear.
Alderman Evans.
So you began this audit, it says the audit engagement letter was dated November 24th. Mm-hmm. So when you do that audit engagement letter, do you send a letter to the mayor or common council president or anyone else asking if there are any areas that they would like you to look at specifically?
We don't do it through a letter, but we actually do chat with the finance committee chair, who's also a member, to do exactly that, really get an understanding of any areas of risk that we should focus on, any potential fraud risks, anything really that would just be relevant to our planning purposes. And so we ask that the committee chair sort of serve as the liaison there to provide that information.
Thank you.
And so then really the only other letter that I wanted to just briefly mention, we do issue an internal control and compliance letter in that your audit is performed in accordance with government auditing standards, so this is a required letter. We note no material weaknesses and no significant deficiencies, no findings of non-compliance. So a very much a boilerplate letter there of a clean letter. And management's letter, we did just provide that as a best practice recommendation for your internal management. And then really I just wanted to reiterate that the records are very much maintaining good order, that we receive full cooperation from the city staff while we perform our audit. I in particular, want to thank not only the staff, but the entire city here for, as I moved back into my role here as partner, getting through that year of transition. Of course, there's things that happened in those couple of years of my absence I needed to get caught back up on, and just very much felt a priority as we moved through the audit process. So thankful to be back.
Welcome back. Shannon, anything from you?
No, I'll just echo Jake's appreciation of the city and the staff for making us a priority and making our jobs as easy as they can be.
Happy to do it. Questions for the auditors? Let's do Alderwoman Evans first.
Well, I didn't have a question. I didn't know. I was going to make a motion to.
Let's do Alderwoman Mayer first.
Paul, I know you thought you were done, but I just need you to explain to me the impact fees on page 88 again. How many different kinds of impact fees are there? There's park.
Park police.
Well, you're going to test me. How many types are there? There's park impact fees. We have a very small administrative fee. There's a police impact fee, a fire impact fee, a water impact fee, and a transportation impact fee. And then about 2 years ago, in 2013, for the area of the city served by the Ryan Creek Interceptor, we also adopted a sewer impact fee. But that is only for that portion of the city that's served by the Ryan Creek Interceptor.
And a library fee.
Oh, I did forget about the library impact fee.
You think I don't read this stuff?
Okay, so as far as the, are all of those held then in the development fund?
Yes.
Okay.
And in your packet for this common council meeting, I believe, is a copy of the first quarter's financial statements. And one of the pages of that is a detailed listing of the balances in each of the impact fees and what's been collected over the last 3 years for each of those fees. So I would refer you to that particular document if you'd like some more information about impact fees.
So then as they're being used, they're taken out of the development fund and put into...
Principally, they're going over to the capital improvement fund to fund current projects. For the police, fire, library, and transportation fees, they help serve debt that was taken on at the time the projects were done. So there's impact fee transfers to the debt service fund. And then as water or sewer projects occur, then the water and sewer impact fees are transferred either to the capital improvement fund if a project is taking place there, or if the utility itself funded the transaction, then the impact fees would be transferred over to the utility. You're welcome.
Alderwoman Evans.
Well, I'd like to make a motion to receive and place on file the 2014.
Tomorrow
night. Oh.
No motion.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Yes.
Second.
I got to act here as Sandy, so hold on a second.
I've got it.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.